He was a brash young noble with a broken sword and sticky fingers. He thought he hated magic until a visit from the god Mistra turned his life around.
You know, turning me into a woman is probably what gave me the biggest boost to my manhood.
A consummate actor, a born storyteller, and a naturally charming entertainer, the great wizard Elminster would dominate the scene of Faerun through most of the 280s, with his roguish styles and potent arcane blasts. But he partied as hard as he prestidigitated.
Now, I really knew I had a problem when I was snorting crushed astral diamond off my hairless Tressim Tasha.
But the golden age couldn't last forever, and every act eventually faces a time of troubles. Now, open your spellbooks with Elminster Almar.
I invented Turnstone to pussy. That shit is mine.
This is the story of the magic behind the wizard.
Come on, buddy.
It was the turn of the spell plague, and the greatest wizard in a generation had a problem. One of his hirelings was getting too aggressive, and the sparks were flying.
There's one thing I always hated. It was that Minsk fella and his damned little hamster. Think he's some kind of prevert, always getting into my stuff. I found that hamster ate half a tab.
When sought for comment, the ranger Minsk, now owner of two horse dealerships and an aspiring pop musician, commented,
I grow tired of shouting battle cries when fighting this mage. Boo will finish his eyeballs once and for all, so he does not rise again.
A notorious lover, philanderer, and illusionist, Elminster dallied with some of the most beautiful women of the Forgotten Realms. Goddesses, ageless dragons, old chicks magicked into young chicks, panthers magically transformed into sexy old chicks magicked into young chicks, Elminster had them all. One of his most famous romances was with the young, maybe, Simbark of Aglarond, the Simbol, now a college professor and aspiring pop sensation.
Oh, Elminster was really something. If you've ever thought a spell made a sort of perverse sense as a sex trick, that's because it was. Bigby's grasping hand, grease, oh yeah, rope trick, Everd's black tentacles, Tasha's uncontrollable, hideous, reverse cowgirl, all Elminster.
As time went by, things would eventually sour for the Faerun power couple, as the young, probably, Simbark found herself questioning his loyalty.
Questioning? I guess if repeatedly walking in on him and Leo high-fiving over Jarl Axel's back counts as questioning, sure. The man was more dick than wizard. If you've ever wondered why Dragonborn have breasts, just ask him.
Late in his heyday, the mighty sorcerer, high on success and a sea of pillowy fantasy titties, would turn to experimentation. Drugs, immovable rods, and spells flowed like water from his workshops and tavern chambers. He would seek like minds in famous wizards of the day.
I remember one time I was hanging with Melf. We were tripping balls. Next thing I know, Bigby's there giving me a handy J. I don't even know what's happening anymore.
Spiraling out of control, Elminster would reach his nadir in the 310s, as in a fit of drunken power, he accidentally removed Mazdika from the map, turned the population of the Sword Coast into Rothay, and for some reason switched genders again. Inevitably, this led to declining popularity and his arrest. Today, Elminster is clean, sober, and looking to the future.
You know, these days, it's just all about trying to give back to the community, you know? Even I took a little drow boy under my wings. Helping him figure himself out really helped me figure myself out.
Elminster's young companion and ward is Driss Doerden, reality show bad boy and aspiring pop sensation. His first compilation of adventures is in shops now, available from Halrua to Chult. We asked the brash young drow about his new business partner.
You know how many times I got hit in the head when I was growing up?
When Behind the Magic Elminster returns, the wizard's infamous appearance on the Garl Glittergold Hour, why Elminster set the Gnome Lord's couch on fire, and more. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thought, the companion podcast to System Mastery, where every other week we get together and discuss whatever we want, and then we answer your listener questions. I'm Jeff, and as always, my co-host John is here with me. John, say goodbye to the nice people.
Goodbye.
All right, that's enough of him.
Okay.
So, John, what did we talk about last week?
Last week was that...
Oh, you forgot, didn't you?
It was Ralph Bakshi's Weezords.
Yeah, that's right. A relatively forgettable, but still kind of interesting because of the horrible source material role-playing game.
Yeah, I mean, the game itself wasn't the worst.
It's not great. There's very little that's innovative about it.
No, well, there's nothing really to, you know, sink your hooks into there. There's nothing that was really overtly terrible about it, but nothing that was like, oh yeah, that seems fun.
In fact, there were a couple things about it that I kind of liked. They had that thing where you could reduce your initiative in exchange for, or you could increase what order you go in. You could go faster in exchange for being less accurate.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of a neat idea that we're starting to see now in modern games as they come out. I think that's actually part of how Exalted works now. Or something? I don't know. It's got a weird initiative.
You don't know how anything
building.
Works.
It's so complicated. The new Exalted system is like, it looks like it's just that Final Fantasy fighting game, just straight up.
Sweet. That's all I ever wanted.
Yeah, that's actually, you know, if you're going to pull an influence to build an Exalted game, you might as well pull it directly out of a fighting game where you play as, like, Terra and you have to beat up X-Death.
Sweet.
So, anyway, one of the things that I think we most particularly disliked, and we always seem to dislike, and we come back to it game after game, that showed up in the Wizards thing, was the extremely complicated math formulas that are generated to show you just exactly how slow people heal up from injuries.
Yeah, and if you haven't checked out the SystemMasteryPodcast.com for our Wizards post, we did get a bit of a back and forth talking about healing times and when they have a place in a game and when it's a little too much or when it's actually useful and things like that. And I thought that was a really interesting conversation. And just to sort of recap what went on there, we had a friend of the show, Ryan, made a comment about how healing time can be useful as a limiting factor in your game, where if you have a pressing concern, the fact that you can't just immediately heal up the next day and then take care of it provides tension.
Yeah, it's a stress ratchet. It lets you build stress on the players by saying, well, you have to get into this next fight tomorrow or else someone will blow up the thing. And you're like, but I'm injured. I have a broken ankle. Well, you're going to have to either sit this adventure out or tough it up and know that when you go in there, you're going to be less effective and maybe die.
And, I mean, he is right. For some stories, you have that diehard situation where you're like, oh, my guy has to walk on glass and he's all fucked up and he doesn't have the advantage for anything, but he has to fight smarter instead of harder and shit like that.
Yeah, which, you know, perfectly reasonable. I don't think that's a wrong argument. I think he's absolutely right. I would point out, though, that generally our pet peeve isn't with the idea of the players staying hurt, but rather with the complicated math of months of time.
Well, yeah. It's not so much that, oh, well, I think that all wounds should be healed within the hour and none should care. It's more that if you look at a system that tries to, like, I want to simulate real life, and wounds don't heal up very quickly, and if someone were to stab you, it would take a while for you to actually get back to full capacity. Okay, yes, that's true. But if you're putting this weird math of like, oh yeah, so you've got your severe wounds, and those will heal after 1 month, and then once you've healed two of those, you go to moderate wounds, and those will heal after 2 weeks and 4 days, and you're like, ah, who cares?
Not only that, but not only do I not care, but it's also deeply mathy, because it's like something that your character knows. If you're using it as a stress ratchet, you're like, well, your character is going to heal from those three lethal wounds in 19 days.
You're like, okay.
Have you ever, like, been seriously, like, really injured, John?
Yeah. I have broken both of my arms before.
Yeah, okay. I had that time where I nearly pooped out all my blood.
Yeah, where you just nearly pooped to death.
I nearly pooped myself to death. Just all my blood came out of my butt. And it was a terrible, terrible couple of days. But I had a lot of very important stuff I was doing for a job I had at the time, so I was like, I have to get healed up so I can get back to my job. And, you know, the hospital was like, oh, you're pooping all your blood out. You get like 2 pints of blood a day as long as you're in here. It is insane how dying you are. So if I was like, how quickly can I get back to work? They wouldn't be like, well, because you have 6 lethal injuries, you'll be back to work in 15 days. They were just like, you're not going back to work. Are you kidding? So
To me, it doesn't really work as a stress ratchet because it's just got too much math assigned to it. The time period, one of the things I said in the comments that we were talking about in the thread was, you know, oh, the count is going to blow up the moon in 17 days, but you'll heal from that broken leg in 19 days.
Yeah. Which, the other thing that I had brought up as well is, in addition to the fact that it doesn't matter if you're healing in a month or a week, because the stress ratchet is almost always a, you need to do something either today or within, like, you know, a day or two.
Yeah, it works way better if it's just sort of an abstract penalty that's placed further into your characters.
Like, but the thing with that is, it's fine if that's that story. Like, if I'm telling the story of Die Hard, or I'm telling the story of Under Siege, or whatever the hell I'm doing, that's fine for that.
Yeah.
But then when I go on to the next story, and it's like, oh, what's this? Oh, well, in this, you're doing sort of a, like, weird little dungeon crawl, and you should be doing whatever, and then I get injured and can't do anything for a month and a half again. Well, fuck, that's not a stress ratchet, it just becomes annoying.
Yeah, well, I mean, it always falls back to our discussion from way back in episode 4 of Prime Directive, where bed rest and surgery were literally mandatory if you took lethal wounds.
Yeah.
Like, you literally had to spend 1 to 3 months in bed, and then the game was like, your character can't participate in additional sessions of this game until he is healed up. Which implied that the only way to play the game was if you got hurt. The other players had to keep playing. They couldn't wait for you.
Yeah, and that's the problem with that, like, stress ratchet, is if you go, oh yeah, you've got to do whatever, you're on a timeline, and even if the timeline isn't like, oh yeah, it's 5 hours until whatever, or I'm doing 24, the RPG, even if it's, there's some political thing, and you need to stop some army from reaching a place within a month, but you're still going to be useless for a, like, month and a half because you aren't going to heal, then it just makes it so that the other players get to look at you and go, either we drag your dumb useless ass with us, or you do nothing.
Right.
And as the player, you're sitting there going, oh great, either I can be useless and just watch everyone be cool while I do nothing, or I get to just go home and say, all right, let me know what happened.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that we talk about Die Hard because that's one of the great examples in the genre of someone getting injured and staying injured and just getting more injured but still having to be more and more canny as they move along.
Yeah.
It's actually surprising how rare that is in fiction. Like, that's not a regular story in fiction. Normally, you're like, lead detective gets shot in the shoulder and the next scene he's fine, he's doing some check.
Oh, yeah. No, normally, the heal times that are dramatic heal times are, oh, I got shot in the leg or the arm or whatever.
Yeah.
And then we're going to fast forward a day or two. Maybe I'm in a sling for a scene. And then it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, even in Die Hard, in the final scene where he's got the gun taped to his back, it's not like he's limping from his foot wounds at that point. Like, even in that movie, the famous example of that movie where he gets his feet all cut up from broken glass, by the end of the movie, he's like, didn't I have cut feet earlier? Eh, who cares?
Huh.
So, anyway, the reason that we brought all this up is because it's a pet peeve.
Yeah, it's just one of our pet peeves, and we wanted to discuss just real quick some of our other pet peeves. We've obviously mentioned a lot of ones that annoy us whenever they come up on the show.
The one that, I've been doing it since the beginning, and I always find it, I'm still stunned when I see it referenced on, like, Reddit or something, and they're like, per Jeff of System Mastery, merits and flaws are considered to be a negative game design idea. And I'm like, what? When did I become an expert? don't cite me.
Oh, yeah, man. We're going to get you on that Wikipedia page, as per Jeff.
Yeah. The as per Jeff is going to be my new podcast that no one will want to listen to.
Yeah.
Calculator watches are a great idea. Get a calculator watch.
As per Jeff.
As per Jeff. We have definitely discussed some of our personal pet peeves, but we figured it's a fun topic, and it's something that we can open up to the listeners and let them tell us what theirs are in role-playing games, too. So, why don't we start? John, tell me one of your biggest pet peeves in the gaming industry.
The biggest peeve for me in games is the odd granularity that shows up for certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's almost always guns and cars
Yeah. Are
the two things that always get this. Occasionally you find it in melee weapons if you're looking at, like, Fantasy Imperium or whatever, where it's like, yeah, here's every single weapon and different weapon that's existed, but it's always just, oh, what is this? This one does a D6. This one also does a D6. This one does a D6. This is a D6 plus one. Great, I used that one.
Yeah, there are two Palladium books that come to mind whenever that's discussed.
and they're the compendium of weapons and armor, and then the compendium of modern weapons. And they're old books that were put out for Palladium, one of them for the Palladium fantasy setting, I'm pretty sure, and the other one for Ninjas and Super Spies, Beyond the Supernatural, things in that era.
Yeah.
And they are just itemized lists.
Yeah.
And it's just, here's 40 pages of swords, here's 40 pages of daggers.
And it doesn't matter. And you're right, Palladium does that a lot, because every book that came out for Rifts was just, all right, here's the setting, here are some guys in that setting, and here's 10 pages of new guns.
Oh my god, and the guns in Palladium are hilarious. They're just tubes. They're just awkwardly drawn, always shown from straight profile tubes.
Oh, it's just MS Paint. I used the circle and square tools.
Yeah, I just put this circle next to the square and then put a fin coming out the top of it. Guns!
Yeah, and it's always just, what is this? Oh, this is a gun, and it does 3d6 MDC. And it has an E-clip that is a standard E-clip.
It has 12 shots, and it has a burst mode feature where it can fire 3 shots for 66 MD.
And the problem with all of this granularity, and even in the cars where it's like, what is this? Well, here's a small sedan, and then a medium-sized sedan, and a large sedan, and an SUV, and here's a truck, and a hatchback, and you're like, I don't fucking care. Like, who gives a shit? Because it's always just like, oh, well, the maximum speed on this is 95, whereas this is 100. You're like, fucking whatever. Who cares?
I think my favorite one we've seen of that so far was, I want to say it was either Haven or it was D20 Modern, that had 3 stat blocks for different types of light commuter trains.
Yes. There's a point where you get to statting out your different ways of getting around or ways of hurting people where you've gone too far.
I know, and you're like, well, hang on. Is this more like Chicago's L train, or are we talking San Francisco's BART? Because, I mean, one of those is a medium light commuter train, and the other one's a heavy light commuter train, and that's going to change the armor value of it.
it's ridiculous to me, because maybe in a setting like Haven, you're like, oh, there might come a time where you're like, no, I need to shoot a bazooka at a train. I need to know what its stats are. But even then, you could go, it's train. It's train stats.
Well, here's the funny thing about this. This is one of my favorite things whenever granularity comes up as a major point of discussion. Heroes Unlimited. Remember how we talked in Heroes Unlimited that a nuclear weapon cannot destroy a door?
Yes.
Okay, that's what happens when you have unchecked granularity in a game. If you have to stat out the SDC values of doors, then you have to make sure that you did that back when later on when you're describing how much damage weapons do. If you just said, nuclear weapons blow doors down because they're nuclear weapons, don't even worry about it. If you're using nukes, you don't need to know the damage. They eliminate everything inside of about 15 miles, and everything outside of about 15 miles is also fucked.
Yeah, it's just, you look at things and you're like, well, I have to scale it up, and like, okay, well, what's the difference in damage between, like, a small medium-range missile and a large medium-range missile? Well, I guess it would probably be a D6 times 10 more for the long, and you're like, no, stop it. As soon as you hit a point of damage with weapons that you're like, I'm shooting you with an intercontinental ballistic missile, don't bother. Don't bother putting damage values down.
I wonder how much damage that guy took in The Rock when he took the missile to the gut and got blown out the building. Remember that when he was the Rocket Man because it was him?
Yeah, it was him. You're the Rocket Man.
Yeah, that guy. How many SDC damage was that?
Oh, God. Yeah, so that's my thing. I don't need it to be like heavy weapon, light weapon, and that's the only stats. But just a few little things, or if you're going to do granularity, make there a reason to be.
Yeah.
Like the new Exalted that we had talked about before has tags for things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, if you use a dagger as opposed to whatever, this has like the bludgeoning tag, or this has the piercing tag, or this has whatever. So there's a reason to use different weapons. So even if you look at something and go, oh, well, this does 1d8 damage, and this does 1d10 damage. Obviously, I will always use the d10 damage, because there's no reason not to.
Yeah,
but if the d8 one's like, oh, but if you use the d8 weapon, then you get a +1 to hit. And you're like, oh, well, is this
better or worse? Well, unfortunately, in Exalted, that's strictly better. But, well, you know, whatever.
Not so much anymore, but still, man.
Accuracy trumps all. That's the rule of Exalted, because accuracy rolls over into damage, which means why would you have damage when you could just have more accuracy?
Except not in the new system.
Oh, does not? I thought it still did.
Nope, just in decisive damage. So if you're withering, it doesn't matter.
Oh, well, that's good design then.
Yes, it makes it so that you don't have to have Dex as king, as is always the way in every World of Darkness property.
I feel like every time I read Exalted threads, they still say Dex is king, and I think that's going to show up in the comment threads where people are like, no, Dex is still king, here's why.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I've read a whole bunch of threads where they're like, I did fights between Dex 5 guy, Strength 5 guy, and Stam 5 guy, and everyone was about even.
Yeah, okay. So, one of my pet peeves, and let it be known that when I discuss pet peeves, they're not things I hate to see in games. I love seeing these things in games, because I hate games and I like to make fun of them. So,
welcome to the podcast, We Hate Games.
We Hate Games.
Jeff hates games.
Good episode, good app. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back next week on We Hate Games, when John will hate games. So one of my favorite things to encounter in games, but then ignore and never use, is the rules for what drugs do.
Oh my god, yeah, that's in so many games. Even games where you wouldn't think it would be in.
Yeah, the rules, it's in all of the Palladium games, it's in Iron Kingdoms, it's in a lot of Dungeons & Dragons, it's in Shadowrun, is the rules of what regular, actual drugs do.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing when you're like, here's my made-up drug called, like, Splice, and it does weird crap.
Yeah, it
but when they have rules
wings.
For, like, this is what happens when you smoke a cigarette. Like,
yeah.
What?
That's my favorite, is whenever you get those rules for what, like, weed does. Weed does one bashing damage and increases your wisdom for 10 minutes, but then decreases your strength for 10 minutes because you have the lazies, also causes you to gain the hunger tag. It's like, what? Why are you doing this? Everyone knows what weed does.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good, especially when you start looking at it, like, palladium-wise, you go, oh, what does cocaine do? Oh, it gives you a +2 to your physical prowess, and you're like, oh, sweet, really?
I'll stop.
Fuck you.
And then it's got the addiction rules for what happens if you get addicted to cocaine and try to break it. You're like, it's a game, why would I break it? I'm not going to live long enough in this role-playing game, or the campaign won't last long enough for me to die of being a cocaine addict.
Also, most games have put in the rules for what drugs do, what the addiction rules are, and what the getting off the drugs rules are, but they don't really add in OD rules or decreasing gain from it.
Yeah, that's the big one, is it doesn't have the I need this just to stay normal rule in most games.
Yeah, you no longer get the decreased effect where you're like, oh, I've gotten used to doing, like, all of the cocaine every day, so now I have to do that just to even out.
Yeah, I have to take half an 8-ball just to calm the shakes. You don't really get that set of the rules. Although, that extra granularity would just be more granularity I don't like about drug rules in games. It's just amusing. I mean, I love reading those sections, because I love reading some square nerd game designer's opinion of what, like, meth does.
Oh, yeah. But when you get to the point where you're like, wait a minute, you don't have an OD rule or a getting used to it rule, which means, fuck you, drugs are great! You've inadvertently told me that as long as I stay high 24/7, I'm just better.
Which is a Rifts thing you can absolutely do, where you just play a character who's just never not on drugs.
Oh yeah,
and you know, realistically, that's not a great idea. In real life, you do not want to just be on cocaine all the time, because there's no downside. But in Rifts, you can be like, well, I'm a juicer, or not even a juicer, because they're already on magic drugs. But just some guy, like, oh, I'm a cyber knight. I'm just always on cocaine. Don't worry, before I started my cocaine habit, I did one big score as a role-playing game player, so I've got a ton of credits, and I will never run out of them or of cocaine.
Yeah, no, I've just got one of my cyber compartments is full of coke.
he's just got a cyber crucifix on him that he can pop open and sniff coke out of.
He's got a cyber ring that he flips open, and it's... But the container to it goes throughout his entire hollow arm. So it just constantly refills with coke.
Part man, part drug mule, all cyber knight.
Oh, the cyber knights, known drug mules.
It's interesting because in the Palladium books, that section is next to some of my other least favorite things in games. One of which is unreasonably granular and complex rules about what mental disorders do.
Yeah. Where it's always like, oh, well, if you have a phobia to whatever, you're at -1 to your willpower, and you're like, ugh.
This is kind of offensive to read this.
Yeah, well, especially when they get to things outside of, like, phobias or philias or things like that.
Yeah.
And it starts getting to, like, you have schizophrenia. You get -3 to your physical prowess, and you're like, oh, fuck you.
Why are you doing that? It's so mean.
Yeah. And especially when, again, you find one where it's like, what do you have? Oh, you have mania? You get +3 to your perception.
Oh, yeah. Or it's a good idea to have to be manic or something. Oh man, look at this. I get so many benefits to how much weight I can carry if I have obsessive compulsive disorder.
Oh yeah, no, but and then it just adds in like, oh, but you're -1 to your strength. And you're like, well, that's fine. I'm not playing a strength character.
I'm playing a mage. Of course I'm obsessive compulsive. We've got this covered.
Great.
Yeah, that's like the most horrifying thing to read in a book is when the mental diseases have stat penalties or stat bonuses assigned to them.
As soon as they're like, oh, if you're autistic, you get a bonus to your perception. You're like, don't do this. please don't do this.
No, that's one of my favorites, is because in Beyond the Supernatural, the horror game, autistic is just one of the classes you can play.
Ugh.
It's one of the OCCs. You're like the autistic psychic.
Yep, and that's just the worst.
That is not okay.
please don't do that.
It's okay to play mental diseases in one game in the world, which is Vanishing Point. Good luck finding it, because as far as I know, there are 550 copies of it anywhere, and we have one.
Yep.
So there you go. So you got any other ones? What else you got?
I mean, pet peeves aside, that are the ones that we've mentioned before, as far as like the merits and flaws, or mostly the merits or flaws that do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the, oh, I get a point because I'm a comedian, or I get the spotlight because I have a villain.
Oh,
those are always the worst. The worst, or GM's discretion.
Yeah, GM's discretion. My least favorite out of all of those is the bad luck flaw or Barrett that shows up all the time, where your character, it doesn't do anything except give him bonus points, but your DM is supposed to make you re-roll one roll like a game.
Yep, one success, you have to re-roll.
Yeah, which is, it's just a game of chicken. It's just a mean game of chicken where you go like, hey, DM, I took the bad luck flaw. Are you going to make me re-roll something super important that'll derail your game if I fail it?
Yay.
No? Ha! 3 points.
Yeah. So, those are generally our pet peeves in a game. Let us know. Go onto the SystemMasteryPodcast.com site. Go under this podcast. Let us know in the comments. You know, let us know on Twitter. Let us know on Facebook. Let us know what your pet peeves are, because I'm sure there's something that you're going to mention that I will have forgotten and go, oh yeah, oh my god, I hate it.
Oh, I'm not even close to done. I have a million more. We just have to move on to answering questions, and I've got a product I want to pitch.
Okay, what do you got?
All right. Barrett, bear this out with me, John, because we talked about it last night. Fat guy white noise generator.
Oh, the fat guy white noise generator. Not just for fat white guys, fat guy white noise.
That's right, it's fat guy white noise. It's a white noise generator for the infaddled gentleman.
Yeah, now what this is normally you have your white noise generator and it's got the beach or rain or a fan.
Yeah. Oh, train noises. Okay. Yeah. Light thunder. Gotcha. Oh, yeah. All right. Okay. I got this. And then some generic white noises. White noise, which is, and then brown noise, which is, and so on.
Ah, yes. The brown noise generator.
No joke. My white noise generator on my phone, because it helps me sleep when I'm in airplanes, is actually does have brown noise, because it's got white noise, violet noise, blue noise, and they're all just various static tones. Anyway, the idea for the fat guy white noise generator is all of the most wonderful, consistent food sounds.
Yeah, so we're talking things like the fajita platter.
Yeah, a never-ending fajita platter just sizzling away at your table. Or microwave popcorn, never dropping to more than 3 seconds between pops, so you don't have to worry about opening up the microwave. Just listen and anticipate the eternal popcorn of noise.
Yeah, you get that noise whenever you get soft serve, and it's just...
Oh, yeah. Little soft serve hum, that's a good one. Yeah, absolutely. I also like the wonderful crisp sound of lighter fluid hitting the inside of a charcoal grill.
And the noise that you get whenever you go to a fountain and get some soda out of there.
Oh, yeah. I think we have more than one soda noise lined up for Fat Guy White Noise Generator. One of them is fountain soda dispensing. The other is the hiss and sizzle of carbonation bubbles from a freshly poured glass.
Yeah. So these are just a few of the samples of sounds you could expect.
These are the ones that would mostly come for free when purchasing the app, Fat Guy White Noise Generator. If you want, though, you can buy the premium experience and buy additional packs added to your app. So, for example, the lighter fluid one is part of the Outdoor Charcoal Barbecue app, which also includes burger sizzling.
Yep.
Yeah.
It includes the rotating of meat on the grill.
Mm-hmm. That also features about every 15 seconds... another man who's not grilling, but is standing behind you while you grill, saying, yep, that looks good.
Yep.
Yep, maybe flip that one. Oh, no, that's a good, let the juices rise. You got that guy. It's also got the rustling sound of charcoal being dumped and the hiss of propane.
And for those of you that are trying to watch your weight, we've got the Diet Fat Guy white noise generator, where it's still a soda coming out, but now it's a diet soda.
It's called diet soda. It's mostly just a change in the name, but it really does make a difference.
You can tell.
Yeah, you can absolutely
tell. It doesn't
matter
how much we try to make it sound like regular soda. There's always a weird little after sound.
That is true. And then we also have Soda Zero.
Yeah.
The third one. And Soda Max. Anyway, why don't we answer some questions? Oh, and if you're an app developer and you want to help us make Fat Guy White Noise Generator, or if you just want to make it on your own and take all the money and steal it from us,
Yeah,
just,
go for it.
Just tell us you did it, because I Googled it, and no one's had this idea yet.
If you make it, just give it to me.
Just send it to us. We want free copies of it.
I
want
to wake up in the morning to the sound of sizzling bacon and go, oh man, I've been listening to this for 8 hours. I am so hungry.
I want bacon so bad. So there you go. If you're an app developer, make that and give us free copies of it. Like I said, I Googled it, and no one's had this idea yet. We win on this idea.
Yeah.
Let's answer some listener questions. What do you say?
I say, good. Let us do this.
Good.
Yes. Yes.
Good.
Let the questions flow through you.
All right, first set of questions come to us from Hildegust von Mithenmitz.
Yeah.
Yep. And Hildegust says, I have three questions for System Mastery. Number one, which chromatic dragon do you most identify with, and what metallic dragon do you most identify with?
Well, of the chromatic dragons, I think I most identify with white.
Okay, so you like the dumb, angry dragon that lives in the snow.
Well, no, just because he's white.
Oh,
and
okay,
I like things
yeah.
that are white.
Oh, I get it. Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Let's see, I'm going to go with chromatics. I'm going to go with blue, because I like the ocean a great deal.
Yeah.
So that's dead. Also, I can breathe lightning.
Yeah, and I mean, also, you live in a blue house.
Oh, yeah, I do, with blue little windows and a blue Corvette. And everything I see is just blue, like me.
Inside and outside.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Christ. In fact, I myself am blue, dabba-dee-dabba-die. And let's see, metallic dragon, that's a tricky one. I'm going to go with copper. I like them because they're very kind of quick and agile and friendly and funny. That's kind of my favorite of the metallic dragons.
I'm going to go with gold because you never see them. And I don't want to see you.
Please stay away from John.
Please don't get near me.
All right. And then, so it was white and gold for you?
Yeah, it's white and gold.
Oh, yeah. And then
it is not blue and black.
Mine was blue and black.
It's white and gold. Ah, the dress. You remember that meme,
people? Oh, that was a meme that lasted like a minute.
You remember how angry everyone was about that? That was great.
Oh, my. Next question. Which of the following deeply upsetting 80s fantasy movies is the most deeply upsetting? Dark Crystal, Legend, Labyrinth, R.I.P. David Bowie, and Return to Oz.
Well, it's obviously Return to Oz.
Return to Oz is kind of messed up.
Because the other ones, you can watch now and be like, oh, okay, that's probably not as good as I remembered as a kid, and all the things that frighten me are just sort of puppets. But watching Return to Oz, I'm like, this is still fucked up. Like, this is still just weird and crazy.
Well, I watched Labyrinth recently. Before David Bowie died, I watched Labyrinth. And one of the things I noticed is I hadn't watched it since I was a kid, and I switched from identifying with Jennifer Connelly to hating her because I have passed into adulthood, and I'm just like, oh, she's so whiny. I want to take away her privileges.
Oh, it's the same thing that happens with all of those 80s movies about kids where you're like, yeah, these kids just want to be free and do stuff, just like I do. And then as an adult, you watch it, and you're like, oh, you fucking little kids. Oh. You goonies, fuck you.
Go to fucking school. Oh, you got to move out of the Pacific Northwest. Boo-hoo. Get a job.
Yeah, it's great. I love when you switch from identifying with the kids to the parents.
That's happened to me with the movie you still have yet to see, A Christmas Story. Has that happened? Because the parents, you don't notice them when you're a kid. You're just like, oh, the dad sure does curse a lot. But as an adult, you're like, oh, I so identify with that dad. Oh, I hate the fucking Bumpuses and their goddamn dogs. So yeah, Labyrinth did not hold up. I now spend my whole time just identifying with David Bowie and hoping he keeps the kid.
Oh, I love Labyrinth still. I don't care.
Well, I mean, Labyrinth is an unhateable movie. My favorite thing about Labyrinth is, and we were talking about this yesterday as well, the two David Bowie songs in it have nothing to do with the film.
Oh, it's just David Bowie songs got just put in there.
Yeah, and they even tried. They tried their best to turn Dance Magic Dance into being about the thing by adding puppets singing stuff that made sense. So anytime it cuts away from him just going, I made my baby blue. And then it cuts to puppets going like, what kind of magic spell? Maybe lightning bolts or puppy dog tails. And he's like, nope, back to 80s metaphors. Fuck your puppet stuff. Look at my big swinging dick.
Yeah, no, I mean, basically none of them have anything to do with anything. As the World Falls Down, which is the one where she's in the crystal thing and she's doing her dance.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's even a scene that has nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
Well, it's
just We made a masquerade scene so that David Bowie could walk around in a masquerade mask singing a song.
I would say out of the three of them, that's the one that has the most to do. Like, just the song lyrics itself has the most to do with the movie. Because the movie's supposed to be about falling away from the trappings of childhood and entering into adolescence. And girls love masquerade ball nonsense. I mean, that's just like... That and Twilight vampires is like their thing. When they're
ponies and the color pink.
When you change from 12 to 13 as a girl, the first thing you're like is, oh man, frills? Lacy shit? Yeah! Give me some of that. Also, I'd like a dude with a codpiece kind of archly wandering around in the distance.
I mean, don't we all, though?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. I mean, it was important to me, too. Don't get me wrong. So yeah, I'm going to go with Return to Oz. That movie's straight up freaky and still is.
Oh yeah, you watch it now and you're like, how the fuck did this get made into a kid's movie? This is still genuinely terrifying.
I mean, I even watched the Large Marge sequence from Pee Wee Herman yesterday, and I was like, oh, that's just cute. That just looks like coop art. I'm not even scared anymore. It kind of looks like those hot rod mice.
Yeah. But no, as a kid, that straight damaged me.
Yeah. And I've mentioned it on the show before, but the scariest movie from the 80s for me was Ghostbusters because of the dogs cracking out of the statues. I don't know why. That scared the ever-loving shit out of me.
Yeah, you're weird.
I know. So there you go. But out of the four you gave us, Return to Oz.
Yep. If you haven't seen Return to Oz, do yourself a favor. Look it up.
I don't want to spoil any of the crazy shit in that movie from you, but the mask sequence and the flying couch.
The wheelers.
Oh, jeez. God.
Yeah. Whole thing. Crazy.
Also, Fairuza Balk. Just freaky.
Yeah. Just top to bottom.
Just never not been freaky. The Craft. Whoa. She just gives you the willies.
She's got them freaky deeks, but yeah. I'm into it.
Yeah. Oh, she's pretty great. I'd take her out for an interesting drink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would get her drink of choice.
I would get her the gayest drink they have at Olive Garden.
The Venetian Sunset?
That's correct, the Venetian Sunset. Gayest drink of all.
I love that drink.
I know you do. Because it's made with infused coconut and pineapple essence.
Anything that has, like, pineapple and grenadine and coconut in it, I am on board. Just give it to me, I don't care.
Yeah, they should call every drink that has those the Bicurious. Because you weren't before you drank it. Anyway, how sweet would a hypothetical White Wolf Gremlins game where the five random archetypes were Spider Gremlin, Brainy Gremlin, Bat Gremlin, Vegetable Gremlin, and Electric Gremlin be?
Pretty sweet?
Pretty sweet. I'd play that, yeah. I mean, it's missing Sexy Lady Gremlin.
I assume that's probably one of the ones that you can't play as.
Oh, it's like Adamant Alchemical Exalts. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, it's not one of the main ones, but it's in there.
Yeah, and, it's mentioned.
Yeah, and then, of course, obviously, your standard gremlin, not mentioned as one of the five you are.
Well, because that's immortal. You don't want to play as a shit gremlin from the first movie. Fuck that. Also, no Mogwai. You can't play as Mogwai.
Well, those are the villains.
Yeah, the bad guys, of course.
Yeah.
And this is a edgy 90s hypothetical White Wolf Gremlins game that has recast Mogwai as the white oppressor bad guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're running around in their convertibles, shooting up gremlins with their bows and arrows.
Yeah. And yet you have to slink in the shadows and learn how to harness your rage as a gremlin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you show the gremlins. What do the gremlins want to do? Gremlins want to have a good time. They want to have a drink. They want to watch a movie. They want to relax after working at the mill all day.
Yeah.
And goddammit, you won't stop running your mouth. I'm sorry.
They want to host a Charlie Rose-style interview show. I haven't seen Gremlins 2 in a while. I think that happens.
Oh, yeah. That is the best. Now, was that civilized? No. All we want is to be made to be civilized.
Yeah, that's right. There you go. I remember the Bat Gremlin flying around. Does he get covered in concrete and turned into a gargoyle?
He does indeed.
Oh,
because he also got injected with something that made it so he could go into the light, because he got the injectable sunscreen.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You know, injectable sunscreen has also been the cause of other gremlin issues, like when C. Thomas Howell was a black guy for 90 minutes. not okay.
Not okay.
Nope, just not okay. So there you go. Those are great questions. That game would be super sweet. If someone made the gremlining, we would totally play it.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Next questions come to us from Brian, who asks, I noticed you two reference a lot of 90s ska and punk in your show, and for that I'm thankful. If you could interview or game with any ska punk band from that time, who it be?
Who it be?
Who it be indeed?
Who it be?
Okay. It's obviously the Aquabats, right?
It's 100% the Aquabats.
It's the Aquabats. Even if you had a really interesting story to tell, like, you know, if you wanted to really talk to, say, Ferris and talk about women breaking into the ska industry or something, the Aquabats are so fun.
No, I would just want to hang out with them.
Yeah.
Because there's the, who would you interview or game with? I mean, I could interview, say, like, Real Big Fish.
Yeah, sure, because, you know, I think famously one of the Real Big Fish guys killed himself after the heyday of the ska era or something. That'd be a good, compelling interview.
Oh, yeah, no, I would just take a hard Barbara Walters turn at that point.
The hard Barbara. Get out the camera grease, boys, we're going soft focus.
So, tell me about your band member that killed himself.
Well, it was the end of ska, and we were trying to transition into a rock band, so we had to lay off, like, 8 horn guys. Just all at once. And no one was hiring horn guys in 1999.
No, of course not. Still no one hires horn guys. Unless you're in the Polyphonic Spree.
And then you need like 15 horn guys.
Yeah, the Polyphonic Spree is like the adoption agency for old ska guys.
We're definitely going to need a couple of horn guys for our new cover band that we've made up. The Bad 90s cover band, Hoobastank and the Blowfish.
Oh yeah, Hoobastank and the Blowfish definitely need some horn guys.
We're going to need at least 3 horn guys for Hoobastank and the Blowfish, which will be opening at Crunchy's on Wednesdays, starting soon.
Soon.
Yeah. That's our new Bad 90s cover band. So there you go. It's definitely the Aquabats. I would also like to hang out with the guys from Real Big Fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Funniest weird sex move, e.g. the rusty trombone.
Oh, it's the hot mic.
It's the hot mic. Now, we can't really even describe the hot mic to you because this is a family show.
Yeah, there are kids listening.
Kids. Oh, you gave me the old hot mic. I'm going to have to get a broom and a dustpan.
Oh, my own cousin gave me the hot mic.
You weren't using the oven to bake cookies.
Oh, Dominic.
Oh, let's see. I'd also say docking is hilarious.
Yeah. The rusty venture.
The rusty venture. Do you know what docking is?
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm talking about get the one with the 2 penises.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're up to speed on docking.
No, I know.
Okay, because there's 2 kinds. But yeah.
There's docking with penises, and then there's docking at the International Space Station.
Which is gross.
Super gross.
Have you smelled the air in the International Space Station?
Also, the International Space Station is what I call my butt.
It's also another sex move.
Yeah, I have to tell people, do you want to dock at the International Space Station? By the way, the International Space Station is my butt.
God, I'm going to try that in a bar. Oh, God. Okay, final question. What's the best way to break a stalemate during role-playing? If we ever got into a fight about metaphysics or some BS, we always played Rock'em Sock'em Robots to decide.
It was always just a D6 for us. It was 1-3, I'm right, 4-6, you're right, let's roll.
Yeah, that's we've always done it with a D6 because it's quick and easy.
Yep.
I mean, I think I have had games where I've challenged someone to a game of magic over questions of honor.
No, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes! I won the game of horseshoes. You owe me a watermelon.
God damn it, I don't want to give you a watermelon. I challenge you to a game of skip it. Whoever can make the counter on that ball go the highest of them all is correct.
All right, it's time to play Bop It. Twist it. Ow.
Quit twisting it. I like the Bop It breaks your arm mode. Twist it. Whack it against the table.
Kill your parents. I'll wait.
So yeah, we mostly just use D6s. I'm sorry, we don't have a hilarious answer for that one.
No, yeah.
I did once settle a role-playing game question. Back in high school, I settled a role-playing game argument with a game of tetherball. Because there was a tetherball court right outside the room we were playing in, because this was a time period where I was playing D&D with my high school physics teacher running the game.
Lol.
So I went outside with another guy, and we settled a game of honor with tetherball.
Good.
Yeah.
That sounds like a fun time.
It is, especially because I was taller than him, which is all you need to do to win at tetherball.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, there you go. Next question comes to us from Ryan. I love this question, by the way. If the Cheese Dudes franchise were to show up as a vendor in a video game, which menu items would be the most or least effective? Which item would only restore 6 hit points? What could you eat in order to restore full HP and MP? Blah, blah.
Now, the other question is, what type of game do you think a Cheese Dude shows up in?
Oh, it's a side-scrolling brawler game. It's River City Ransom.
Oh, see, now I was thinking it was GTA. Like, oh, you straight up walk
okay.
into one.
Walk into a Cheese Dudes? All right, well, then we have 2 versions of it here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the other one, I'm thinking if it's, like, side-scroller, then it's not so much that you go into a Cheese Dudes. It's just, I punched a trash can, and then there was a 7 kinds of thing.
I don't think you've ever played River City Ransom, which is, like, the earliest side-scrolling beat-em-up game. In this game, well, I'm not really. I mean, I gotta count shit like Yee-Yar, Kung Fu, and what have you. But no, this is a really old Nintendo beat-em-up game.
Oh, I know of it. Yeah. I just never played it.
You went into restaurants in it and bought things, and they restored smaller and larger amounts of hit points. It was really interesting. Anyway, do you think this is a game or an episode where it's finally safe to tell people just exactly what a cheese dude is?
Should we tell people the secret?
Okay, I think I'm going to tell people what a cheese dude is, so they can tell me.
So what are all the herbs and spices that go into a cheese dude?
All right, so the basic concept behind a cheese dude, for all you who've been waiting patiently for 2 years, a cheese dude is a mozzarella stick, except it's triangular, and it isn't necessarily mozzarella.
Yeah.
Inside of each fried cheese dude triangle of goodness is a different sort of regional cheese. They are sold in platters arranged by country.
Yep, and so you get a cheese from that location.
We have three cheeses from each location, yeah. And then an appropriate regional dipping sauce.
Yeah, you get a dipping sauce that goes with it. So, I mean, you can get things like the American one, which is just American cheese and cheddar.
And probably a Colby Jack.
And then you get ketchup.
You get ketchup or barbecue sauce for dipping.
Yeah.
And then you can get the French one, which has a brie and camembert and so on, and it comes with like a cream or a bechamel sauce for dipping. The Italian one, which is mozzarella and provolone and I don't know, Asiago maybe, and it comes with a marinara for dipping.
Yeah. So you get that, and you can get your regional plate, or you can get the around-the-world platter.
Yes, which is every kind of cheese on a giant plate with a huge dipping sauce rainbow in the center.
Yeah.
So I mean, you can get the Mexican one, which has like Oaxaca and queso fresco and like that Mexican cheese blend, all melted together and then served with a delicious salsa dip.
Yeah.
So awesome idea. We've been wanting them for forever. It's a crime that this restaurant doesn't exist.
I know, right?
And also it is served by weird hillbillies who also want you to drink Yump.
Well, yeah, that is the aesthetic we're going for, is Appalachian chic.
Yeah, we got the idea from looking at your basic hot dog on a stick restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, you go to a mall nowadays, and they keep trying to make the mall, like, food court look nice, and like, oh, we've got, like, fresh-made sushi, and here's Mongolian barbecue, and a hot dog on a stick.
And, you know, it's like, oh my god, look at that Indian restaurant. They have, like, a waiter, and you can't even see the food while they're making it. They're making it in the back somewhere. This is so high class. And right next to it, there's a woman working a lemonade churn, a bunch of rotating hot dogs and a big frying oil vat. Oh my god, is that cashier whittling?
Well, my hot dog on stick will get you. What you up?
What you up to? I'll take Pepper Jack on a...
Pepper Jack? Well, la-dee-da, look at our European friend.
No, sorry, all we make is freedom cheese.
You can get American cheese, friend. These colors do not melt. Also, neither does the cheese. I'm sorry.
Strawberry lemonade? Moonshine it for $1. Y'all, what kind of corn dog you want? Turkey or possum? No, but that's what Cheese Dudes is originally. But then we have this idea for the glorious international cheeses of the world. In fried dipping form.
Yeah.
Why doesn't that exist? It's a brilliant idea. So anyway, the one that would restore the full HP and MP, and this is something you learn from World of Warcraft, the higher up that food values go as they restore more and more health, the grosser the food sounds.
Oh, yeah.
So for example, in World of Warcraft, for example, if you eat, like, a banana, it's a shitty low-level food item. But when you get to, like, Northrend, it's like, what do I get to restore my food? Oh, pungent seal whey.
Ah, the pungent seal whey.
Rancid whale milk. You're just like, oh, god damn it, why is my character eating this?
Ew.
Fried tentacle of undetermined origin. Oh, I don't want to eat this. So, the Cheese Dude's item that restores full health is the Grand Stink Platter, which is the stinkiest cheeses in the world fried into mozzarella sticks.
Also, that cheese that is full of maggots.
Yeah, it's got kaiju, I forget what it's called specifically. But
yeah, kaiju, that's it.
It's kaiju, it's a maggot cheese. So it's the it's the nastiest, stinkiest cheeses. It's got like your Limburger, the maggot cheese, Bierkäse, all the cheeses that just smell like socks farting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all of those, that's the full HP and MP. It's a challenge platter at Cheese Dudes. If you can eat the Grand Stink Platter, then you get a Cheese Dudes t-shirt and your name on the wall of Cheese Heroes.
Yes.
So there you go.
There you have it.
The one that restores 6 hit points, I believe, is a glass of Diet Yump.
Yeah. And I still love the idea of just punching a trash can and finding that in there.
Huh. So, Diet Yump.
Huh, what do you know?
There's some Cheese Dudes in this trash. Well, probably.
I mean, yeah, given the Cheese Dudes in any given dumpster, you're probably going to find something from there.
A couple of Cheese Dudes wrappers. There's always a little cheese stuck to the top of the package.
In fact, there's always a little cheese at the top of the package, if you know what I mean.
I think it's in their guarantee. Welcome to Cheese Dudes. There's cheese on that paper. You can lick the cheese off the paper if y'all so inclined. Y'all can get extra paper cheese for a nickel.
Aw, paper cheese.
It's extra cheese on the paper.
Yeah.
You tell me you've never eaten the cheese off the paper like Carl's Jr.?
No, I am a fat man with no shame. I have done that.
You have eaten cheese right off a piece of wet paper.
Yeah.
As God intended.
I have finished a burger, looked down at my cold, congealed cheese on a piece of paper that's covered in grease and gone, yeah, that seems like a good idea.
That's the last flavor I want.
That's what I wanted in my mouth as the last thing I taste. Yeah, let's do that. I've had that idea.
Everyone has, I believe.
Everyone has shame eaten a bit of cheese off of a piece of paper.
Or the top of a pizza box. Realized
that was dumb.
Yeah.
You're like, you eat the pizza, and then you're looking at it like, oh, I kind of want more pizza. What I do have is this crusty cheese in the middle of the box on the lid. I can scrape some of that off. Take some of the lid with it. That's fine. That just adds some more consistency. I'm getting fiber now.
That's almost the same consistency as dough.
Oh, now it tastes like I'm eating Little Caesars.
So that's the lowest class item right there is lid cheese. You can get some of that cheese dude's lid cheese. It'll restore your 6 hit points.
There you go.
Oh, God. Next question comes to us from, and I got to scroll down here, Lauren.
All right, Lauren.
Lauren says, here are some more afterthought questions. What should the newly theorized ninth planet be named, keep in mind, John, all previous planets are named after major Roman deities?
All right, well, keeping that in mind, mm-hmm. I think it should be named Gilbert.
Yeah, probably Gilbert.
I'm hoping it has one moon that we can name Sullivan.
Yeah. The whole thing with the Roman deities is that nerdy astronomers in the past years since they discovered Pluto in the 40s or early 50s when they discovered Pluto have used all the good Roman deity names to name shitty rocks.
Well, we've gotten any moon you can think of is also some Roman deity.
Yeah, like I was thinking, oh my gosh, this thing's even further away than Pluto and it's bigger. It's the size of Neptune. That's the theorized ninth planet if you haven't heard about that. It doesn't even orbit the sun. It just orbits near the sun. It's part of it's connected to the sun in some way. And it's so far away, and its orbit is a 15,000-year orbit.
Wow.
It's really neat to read about this planet. So I was like, okay, well, if Pluto was the god of the dead, let's take another Roman deity of the underworld, Orcus, and say, let's name it after Orcus. No, Orcus is some shitty asteroid, because everyone who spots a rock in the sky gets to name it now, apparently.
Ugh. Yeah, you goddamn astronomers, get your shit together.
Yeah, rocks should be named like M1C55153, a rock. That should be the names they get.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. If you find an asteroid or a comet or fucking, like, some weird planet that's millions of light years away, and you go, oh, I've named this one after some god. Like, no, you didn't. Fuck off.
I've named it Demeter, out of the hope that it has wheat upon it.
Wheat.
No, it does not have wheat. Stop naming rocks after fucking gods.
Yeah.
That's, you know what space has an abundance of? Nothing and rocks.
Yeah, I mean, at least with Mars, you're like, oh, it's Phobos and Deimos. You're like, all right, I get it.
Granted, Phobos and Deimos are misshapen, lumpy rocks, but they also orbit Mars.
Yeah, they are Mars moons. That's
fine. They're not in the boring-ass Kuiper belt or the Van Allen belt.
Yeah, anything in a belt, no good.
Shitting belts sucks.
Ah, your shitting belt's broken. Looks like that's going to be that's not a problem.
get a new shitting belt. It's going to cost you about $400. Why does my car have a shitting belt?
Well, I mean, when they made them newfangled cars, they got the shitting belt there, and that's going to make sure your shittings go on.
Oh, Christ. All right. What are some more musical artists that have better or worse greatest hits albums than you would expect?
All right. Well, my number one is Foreigner. Foreigner's greatest hits, you think about Foreigner and you're like, oh, I can probably name a song or two that Foreigner did.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can name more than that if you watch the episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force with the Foreigner belt.
Yeah.
But Foreigner is one of those people that as soon as you put their greatest hits album on, you're like, what is this, like 20 tracks? What the fuck?
Yeah.
And then you listen to it, you're like, oh no, I know every song on here.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah. I would say Jay Giles Band is the same way. Like, you don't think so. You think Jay Giles Band did Centerfold.
Yeah, that's all you know. You're like, oh, Jay Giles Band, that was Centerfold. That they were a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, and then you put on the album, and you're like, oh my god, these guys were the music of the 80s! They are a living Time Life collection! So those two are sort of, wow, I had no idea these people had so many hits. I mean, what's your personal favorite greatest hits album? I think probably we already said Queen.
Queen, absolutely amazing. The Foreigner one is great. Obviously Smash Mouth.
Yeah, definitely Smash Mouth. The first Madonna greatest hits, the Immaculate Collection or whatever it's called, is just wall-to-wall amazing. There's no song on there that you're not going to sing along with.
Oh, yeah. Weird Al's greatest hits.
Weird Al's greatest hits. Let's see. Tom Petty's greatest hits is a big favorite of mine. Because it's one of those greatest hits that has a thing on it. That I know Tom Petty's my favorite artist anyway. So, of course, he's going to be one of my favorite greatest hits albums. But one of the things he does that I love is when his greatest hits album has two new songs.
These are also great hits. Fuck you, I know.
They are.
Yeah.
One of them is Mary Jane's Last Dance. I mean, that is an awesome song.
It is an awesome song.
Yeah. So the other one is Something in the Air, which no one gives a shit about. I mean, it's a great song, but no one cares.
No.
So anyway, least good greatest hits albums. Least Descent, let's go with there's a Three Doors Down greatest hits album.
Is there?
Yeah, sure. Oh. There sure is. John, can you name two Three Doors Down songs?
No.
Can you name one?
Superman?
Kryptonite, but yes.
Kryptonite, whatever.
Yeah, so there you go, you got one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to learn that there's probably a greatest hits of Fuel as well.
Oh, you know what there needs to be is Nickelback's greatest hits.
Oh, there definitely is. Nickelback's a huge sensation. It's not...
You're going to listen to that album and go, yeah. I've heard every single one of these songs before, and it makes me sad.
I think everyone in Canada owns every Nickelback album. It's like a tax thing, like they have to.
Yeah, it's part of your taxes, yeah. And then you just get mailed the latest album.
Yeah, they tell you about the free healthcare. What they don't tell you is that every time you go to a checkup, you get a Nickelback album.
Oh, that is great. You just have to go up to the counter and be like, all right, show me your card. Okay, great. Here's your Nickelback.
Oh, great. Oh, this one has the bottom of every bottle on it. I'm so glad. I can't wait to listen to that.
All right, now, here's your eye test. Now, look at this photograph.
Oh, oh yes. Well done, sir. So
Nickelback.
Nickelback. Terrible band. Terrible people, probably. And, of course, John and I have seen them.
So ever briefly.
In concert. For about a minute.
For one whole song before we were like, well, sir.
I think we started walking out halfway through. It was Photograph. We went to a show, a Nickelback show, because we wanted to see Papa Roach, who was opening for them. We watched Papa Roach and Hinder and
Saving Abel.
And then Nickelback comes out, and here comes old Chad Kroeger wearing his black t-shirt tucked into his jeans.
Hey, San Diego, do you like marijuana cigarettes? All right, well, it's time to go.
Yeah. Do you know where I can find a marijuana cigarette? Because I like to take puffs upon them.
Maybe when I'm in Balboa Park? Eh?
Right, it's like, the way he said marijuana was so fake sounding. His black t-shirt just seemed like it was an inside out dare shirt. Like after we were like, yes, we do know where weed is. He's like, I'm going to report you to the authorities.
Whereas I just kept imagining going, do you kids smoke the marijuana? Who wants to rap about Jesus?
That too. I'm not even Nickelback. I'm live. You had no idea I was secretly a Christian rock band.
I am secretly your youth minister.
Be awesome. Chad Kroeger, youth minister.
Oh, Chad Kroeger, youth minister. Great.
Great comic book, by the way.
Yes.
All right. What's the most pointless stat block you've seen in a game?
The most pointless stat block I've seen in a game is for Apsu in Pantheons of the Megaverse for Rifts.
Yeah.
Because all of the other gods as well are fucking, why do you need a stat block for them? A few are fightable because they're like pretending to be gods.
Mm-hmm.
But Apsu is straight up one of those ones where it's like, he has 10 million MDC and he does at will 20 attacks and they all do 10,000 MDC and he knows every spell and every psychic power and he's immune to all damage. And you're like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Who cares?
What's the point of all this? Usually the gods are completely worthless. But just for sake of consistency, I'll take it in the other way and say anytime one of the books has, like, the detailed rules for the damage that small animals can do, where it's like, common tree frog. This animal does 1d2 minus 4 damage. It has 1/8 of a hit point. Its AC is 25. You can always hit it. It's like, why am I getting these stats? It should just say, frog, you can kill these with your hand if you want.
Frog, in the background, no one cares.
Yeah. You can kill X frogs per turn, it doesn't matter. No one can stop you.
You can kill your level in frogs per turn.
You shouldn't, though, because frogs are nice.
Don't do that, though, you goddamn sociopath.
You kill your level in frogs per turn. What's the face to bloodshed line?
How can dehumanize yourself and kill X frogs per turn.
There it is. Okay, Aphrodite, goddess of love, Hera, goddess of magic, and Athena, goddess of wisdom, are arguing over the apple of discord again. They offer you the same bribes as the legends. Aphrodite offers the love of the most beautiful woman, Hera, rulership over Asia Minor, and Athena, wisdom over all others. Who will you choose, and why?
Okay, well, I'm gonna take, Hera for rulership over Asia Minor. Asia Minor's got it going on right now, plus, if I'm the ruler, I figure I don't have to work that hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I probably have a decent income and I can fuck around.
Oh, yeah, you can be like the Kim Jong-il of Asia Minor.
Yeah, I'll just be like, I will be dear leader of Asia Minor and it'll be great.
Okay, that seems reasonable.
Yeah, what are you gonna go with?
Fuck those bitches, I want that apple. That apple of discord sounds fucking delicious. Just gonna eat that.
Yeah, it sounds golden delicious.
Oh shit, is it a golden delicious?
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping since it's like a god apple, it'd be a honey crisp at least.
Oh man, golden apple.
Whatever, I still want it. They want it so bad and they're willing to offer me Asia Minor for it. That apple's gotta be great. So I'm gonna get in the fight for the apple and nuts to Asia Minor. And,
just fucking dip that shit in caramel.
Dude, yes. I'm going to cut that thing up and make a pie.
There ain't nothing that don't taste better when you put it on a stick.
Jeez, dudes. Apples of discord on a stick. Also, try the new apple of strife on a stick.
Oh, God. Okay, there you go.
Each one comes with a tiny toy of a hundred-eyed god. All right. Thank you, Lauren. All right, I think we've hit an hour, so we have a few more questions. We should just put them off for 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, we can go ahead and finish up these questions later on. Thank you so much for sending in questions, those that did. Anyone who we didn't get to, we will get to you later.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a question for us, please send it in. We always need more. We always love reading them. And you can get us on Twitter. If you're going to do that, use the hashtag Afterthought.
You know what's funny? If you just search the hashtag Afterthought without also looking at us, it's all these people who were sad about dates they shouldn't have gone on.
Oh, yeah. No, make it so, at System Mastery, hashtag Afterthought.
There you go. That'll get you the question, because I tried checking that the other day, and it did come up with a couple of questions, which I think we actually answered. So it did work. Keep doing it. And if it didn't work yet, don't worry. Oh, you know what? It didn't. The next question is a Twitter question.
Oh, well, let's do that one.
All right, sure.
Let's do one Twitter question. We always go long anyway. You don't care.
Question comes from pretty good band name. Who would win in a fight? The two strongest Boons or Mr. Bartles and Mr. James? Who do you side with and why?
Okay, well, I'm definitely going to go with Mr. Bartles and Mr. James.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to go with you on this one. I've never been a big Boone's strawberry wine type drinker.
Well, you know it's going to be essentially weird hillbilly folk, because it's Boone's farm.
Yeah, and that must be who the two strongest Boons are. I mean, if you can get them to stop fucking each other. Maybe they're high-fiving over the family pig.
Yeah, but then Mr. Bartles and Mr. James just sound like British secret agents.
Oh, dude, they absolutely do. And one of them's all huge and the other one's really tiny. But you know the really tiny one is dangerous.
Oh, yeah, he's way more dangerous.
And he's the only one who talks.
And that's Mr. James.
That's Mr. James. And Mr. James is the only one who talks. Mr. Bartles is deadly silent.
Oh, yeah, he's just like, hello, good to meet you. I'm Mr. James, and of course my associate, Mr. Bartles.
Say hello.
And Bartles just cracks his knuckles.
Yes.
Oh, I'll get you.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
So that's Bartles and James right there. British secret agents. And you know that little guy throws knives or something.
He's so dangerous with a bladed weapon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Bartles will just throw you. He will defenestrate you every time.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter if there's a window. He will fenestrate a window up by defenestrating you through it.
Yeah, that's what happens.
That's how he works. That's how he makes his living. Where the Boons are just going to be like, I got a shotgun.
I'm coming at you with a shovel.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. I mean, the real winner, of course, is the folks at home when they make the sweetest drink in the world. Remember
oh, yeah.
when we did that? Oh, what was in that? It was Sprite.
Sprite and
Boone's blue Hawaiian flavored wine and Bartles and James red ones.
Yep.
No, it was blue ones. It was blue ones.
And you put them all together into a cup.
In a mason jar with a bunch of ice cubes in it.
Wow, this really tastes like a headache.
Is that an ice cube in there? Oh, no, it's one of my teeth.
So there you go. Twitter questions. We love them.
We love them. So keep sending them in to System Mastery and then hashtag Afterthought. And leave comments on the podcast right below this.
Yep.
Especially about your pet peeves. We really want to hear what your big, dumb game pet peeves are.
And you can go ahead and find us on Facebook. Leave us comments on our page there.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know if you love something or you hate something. Again, tell us your pet peeves. We want to know.
Yeah. Support us on Patreon if you want to do that. If you're not already, Supporting us on Patreon gets you bonus episodes. Once every 2 weeks, we put out a bonus episode.
And let me just tell you, the last few have been golden.
Oh, that Gamma World one was worth the price of admission. I feel like we should just do Gamma World ones whenever the game is boring from now on. Just make more Gamma World characters.
Yeah, seriously, if you haven't, just subscribe for long enough to listen to Gamma World and then just be done.
Yeah, that's fine. We won't hold it against you. So there you go. Thanks very much for listening to the Afterthought Podcast. As always, I've been Jeff. This has been John.
I have indeed.
And you guys have a lovely week.